You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host Evan.
Hello.
And today we are joined by Jeremy from Simple Little Life.
Hey guys, how's it going?
What's up, man?
Not too much.
Good. All right, Devin, what do you got for us today?
We're going to hit us with two, and we can pick which one we like, or you can like them both. It's up to you. Here we go.
All right.
Much of the stress that people feel doesn't come from having too much to do. It comes from not finishing what they started. The second one is, it's not enough to be busy, so are ants. The question is, what are we busy about?
All right. So that's two weeks in a row you got these double quotes for me.
I just have so many quotes. I just want to pick whatever one you want.
I like them both, and I agree with them both sometimes, and sometimes I don't. I don't know.
what part don't you agree with?
Well, I mean, I think, like you said, so it's like having something to do, being busy is having something to do or something like that. Wait, what's the first one again?
Sorry, I know. With two, it kind of spreads you out.
Yeah, I know. Right? I'll forget the gist of both of them.
Much of the stress that people feel doesn't come from having too much to do. It comes from not finishing what they started. I found interesting. That kind of makes you think, like, is that really what it is? Or obviously we can all get overwhelmed with things we want to do and things we are going to finish. Yeah. But it's also, I think that is right. It comes from having too many things that maybe
that are unfinished. You're
just not wrapping up properly.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I identify with that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I could definitely see that. And what's the second one again?
It's not enough to be busy. Ants are busy. The question is, what are we busy about? That's just saying you got to focus in on what you're, you can't just be busy for, I mean, you can, but it's not necessarily good for you.
Yeah, so at first I was thinking it was more along the lines of like keep yourself busy or something like having like stuff to do. I don't know. So what I was saying before was like I agree that having something to do and having like the purpose of having lots of things to do is good sometimes and also bad sometimes because it's harder to finish when you have a lot of things on your plate, right? You're juggling too many things. So it's hard to like feel like you're making progress. And I think as a content creator, we can all probably agree with this is like being able to work through, like having a video, you have to finish, right? Because you have, it has to have a start and a finish. So like, it actually is a nice thing to have these like concise videos that have to be done, because then you have to come away with a finished product, or at least something that like you can either finish the video, right? It's a finished idea. So I think that definitely gives us the ability to like, to finish things more often than other people who don't have that, I guess. Right.
You know, you do have an actual finished product that you can like watch and go, oh, it's finished.
Right.
That is nice. Jeremy, I know you have a sponsor, I think. So do they give you like a, have you said like, I'm going to do a monthly video, and does that ever stress you out to have that? Like, oh crap, I got to finish something up here.
Yeah. So basically I owe them one video a month. You know, the pathetic part is sometimes that's the only reason I make videos. Last year too has been just kind of crazy for me, but it is like, so I did my video, like we're busy with a Christmas rush and, you know, in December, and then I did my sponsored on video for them on the 29th, and I'm just like, what am I going to do? You know? And, if you have time, you put it into it. I mean, the stuff obviously could relate to my channel, right? I mean, it's basically like like a Canadian version of a Harbor Freight. Right, and so obviously it's a nice fit, but trying to come up with, not necessarily just like, here's a review of a product or this, or maybe trying to incorporate the sponsorship into a bigger project. That is a lot of work sometimes, but definitely a little pressure, and it's like, okay, I got to get this done.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Man, we need to get Harbor Freight down here. Sponsored. Yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's that like eternal question of is it better to have a deadline, or is it, you know, if you don't have a deadline, will you procrastinate? Or like, if you don't have a deadline, will you even do what you want to do? You know, so like, that's that like staying busy or not, you know? So I think, I mean, I definitely think having those deadlines, and me as my background in fine art, having deadlines can definitely push creativity, because you're forced to be creative, right? So you're forced to like, I don't know, I would say like brainstorm, or like idea dump, you know, like, all right, I got to get some ideas down. And so then that pushes me like as an artist into a creative space. And then once I'm in that space, then I can like, you know, draw something or make something, and then that turns to something else, and that turns into something else. So I can kind of get those creative juices flowing more when you have that deadline approaching.
Mm-hmm. What's the negative side about that? Getting finished and being disappointed with like the thing you produce, you think?
The negative side about,
yeah, I mean, if like we're saying, I mean, it definitely is positive deadlines and to get stuff done, and because you know you will get something done, but what can you lose in that pursuit of just knocking it out? Like maybe, like I would think maybe it's just not as good as you think it could have been, but that's like every project, right? Project ends when like you just run out of time. Like, oh, that's right. It's never done, but eventually you do just have to be done with it.
Yeah, I think Picasso said like his paintings were never finished. He just stopped at some point. Just stopped painting. You're like, okay, I gotta stop. Yeah, I mean, I think, you said like having the deadlines, I think, makes it maybe feel more like work rather than something that you hope you can do because you just enjoy it, right? So ideally, it's like, oh, so I'll relate it back to painting. Like, and ideally, I'd love to have this like giant studio with all these paintings going all the time, be able to paint however you want, and you're like intrinsically motivated to go in and work all the time. But that's hard to do, especially when, you know, I have, like all of us, we have a family and children and, you know, other things and responsibilities. So it's like, you're not just doing one thing all the time. So it's kind of you have to be able to like put all these things together and juggle them in a way that makes sense. And then maybe eventually we'll have that freedom to like do whatever you want every day, and you'll be intrinsically motivated to get up and do those things. You know,
maybe. That's tough. Before we move on, I want to say I was driving home, rushing home, and I was thinking of, that's where I was looking for busy quotes. I was like, man, we're pushing it, because I had a full-blown like total art of craftsmanship day. I like woke up, played with my daughter, so check like the family thing off the list. I made a Home Depot run. I came home, finished the trim around the new door, worked on the floor part. Then I, I talked with Bass Pro Shop about my gun safe. So that's like nature stuff, like getting outside. Then after lunch, I started editing. And then I was working on that, trying to knock that out. And then more door stuff. Then I went to your place, Dust.
Yeah.
And then we did a solid 3 hours of in the can.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Then a quick beer run. And now and we're now here. Now we're here with Jeremy.
Yeah.
And then after this, I'm going to try to upload. I'm going to do a little quality control. Watch it. Upload it. Watch it again on YouTube. And then
upload the last video.
So full beginning to end Art of Craftsmanship content day.
Yeah, when you guys are like night owls too, because it's like later in the evening for you guys.
It is, yeah. It's crazy, 10:15 here. Ooh. Yeah,
I'm in bed by 10 every day.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm a late night person. Like, if I'll stay up till midnight or later most nights. That's just me. I guess I just don't need a ton of sleep, but it does these days. There are definitely days where when we record and then do the podcast right after the recording, it feels like a long day, you know, it's because we've also like, we've been at work. I've been at work all day and then record some and then do the podcast. It's like whoosh, straight through, but yeah. Man, you got to hustle, man. That's how it works.
Yeah, that's right.
No, but I think, speaking for myself, I really enjoy doing the podcast. It's, I think it's fun and I think it's a great way for like us to talk to cool people like you and talk to people who we would otherwise not really get to talk to, but also, to stay connected with our community of, followers and subscribers and people like that. I think that's the part that I hope is the most beneficial for us and for the channel. Is that people get connected. And I also love that, Devin's on here with me because people don't see Devin in the videos. Yeah.
And later on we can grill Jeremy about why he doesn't podcast anymore. So.
Yeah. That's right. Well, I will say right now, like, I'm a religious listener to your podcast.
It
comes out, that's the thing I do. I really enjoy it. And, you guys have such a good dynamic, and it was really great last week with your dad on there, and then we have your other brothers, and your audio. I gotta say, your audio is always so clean. It's just like, oh man, where are they recording this? It sounds like you're in some studio in New York City or something like that.
No, the secret is like just the bare minimum of cost of price podcasting set.
Yep.
and I'm in a studio in my house that's full of like art supplies and knitting supplies.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Like nothing important. Just, yeah. We do have
good sound dampening in there.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess. Yeah. I'm not sure what it is. Like,
well, I think we both have the same mics and we both, and cast is really nice. And whatever you got, Jeremy, you sound great too.
Yeah.
You're real clean. Yeah. I like how when you were doing your podcast, and I think you showed some stuff on your channel about building your little podcast studio, like underneath the stairs, and then like this little like Harry Potter room,
In the dungeon.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't breathe under there, so like in the summertime, like an hour and a half, I still do a podcast with somebody else, but so I'd crawl under there, and some days, man, I come out and I'm just sweating. It's just gross. Okay, we got to end the show right now. I'm done.
What's your other podcast?
It's called Can-Am Soup.
Oh, right on.
I do it with a gentleman. He's in Tennessee, Todd Fuss. Okay. He's actually he's bought more of my knives than I think everybody else combined. He's got a real problem.
Nice. Right on.
He was a formal he's an aircraft mechanic for the U.S. Air Force, and then did legal stuff, worked, actually lived in Baltimore for a while. His wife worked in D.C.
Oh, nice.
Oh, and just pandemic, they ended up transitioning. They were able to work from home. She still works for the Pentagon, but from home. But and then he was also a special forces trainer, and so guns and knives, he has like thousands of them.
Oh wow,
it's unbelievable. Yeah,
I think at that point it's just like you got to keep going.
Yeah,
if you have a collection like that, you just got to keep building on it. Then it's just like something you're leaving for your family or whatever it is.
Oh, okay. Before we formally introduce Jeremy, I got a question for you both. I don't know. Did I tell you my gun safe issues, Dust?
Briefly, yeah.
Okay, so I, for Christmas, the in-laws, I was telling them, well, I got a few guns, and now we have a baby girl. So my wife's like, you're not getting any more until we get a safe. I'm like, okay, fair enough. And then I get one for Christmas, get it home. It's a 16 gun safe, Cabela's, you know, it's like 400 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Get it in, take all the box stuff off, and there's a crack like in the top right corner where the door connects. And it doesn't affect the door. And I don't think it would affect, maybe if someone hit it with a sledgehammer. But if someone was doing that, we'd have other issues anyway. So I'm not worried about that. So what they were saying, I talked to customer service. They're like, at first they're like, hey, bring it back to the store and we'll replace it. I'm like, it took three guys to drive it across the county and then to get it into my house. Like, no, like this is, you guys have to come get it. They're like, all right, well, yeah, we can send someone to come get it. But I'm deciding. Here's either or. Option one, I keep it, and they give me like a $75 gift card. Mm. Or option two, they come pick it up, and I try to find another replacement because this one isn't in stock anymore. So what would you guys do in that situation?
Like does it have a fire rating on the safe?
I don't know the rating, but I know it's, I think, yeah, fireproof for like 30 minutes.
Would it seem like this damage would adversely affect that?
That is what I was thinking. Like, that's the main thing that could happen. It's not a huge crack, but it's more than just paint. I can see under the paint it's cracked. I don't know what happened. I'm guessing in shipping it just banged up against something.
Yeah, and so, is there the other question, is there a similar one, like similarly priced one that you could get that is like a comparable exchange?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because I kind of brought that up too. I was like, well, how much can I spend? Like, hoping they would go like, well, you can get something that's $100 or $200 more, then maybe I get that. But the issue is I like the one I got. That's the one I wanted. So now I got to get something else? Like, I don't know.
Have you put your guns in it yet?
No.
Because, I've got a couple gun safes, and you'll buy them. It'll be like, 14 gun safe. And it's like, when I get eight of my guns in there, that one's full. So as long as it's not like, if you bought like an eight gun safe and you have eight guns, I don't know. It may not quite be enough room, but it's only a few rifles or whatever like that, but it drives me nuts how they rate those gun safes. It's like, not a chance.
Oh, yeah, right.
They have to be, like, packed tight in.
Yeah, or
yeah, that is one
22s, yeah.
Yeah, right.
You can fit 100 handguns in here.
That's right, yeah. For sure.
I don't know. I guess you'd kind of figure out what your options are.
I know. I kind of just want to fill the crack, get you to match paint at Dust when you come over next time, and then I'll go spend $75 at Bass Pro.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. You're ahead that way, right?
Right. Yeah. And you know, if the main concern is that it's safe in the house, you know, so that way your daughter can't get into it and someone can't just come in and take what's there easily.
Right.
You know, if that's your main concern, obviously, like Jeremy said, if it's fire as well, if that's a concern, that might, you know, it might be worth it then. Obviously, fire is always a concern, and we're never like, oh yeah, I'm expecting to have a fire, so I have to have a fire safe. But but you know, I don't know. I guess that's a hard one. I think in that situation, I would try to get a new one. But I haven't seen the crack, so that's the other thing.
I don't know. You know, I was hoping they'd offer me like a much better, like,
we'll exchange it for this really back. Nice one.
What about your nice guy discount?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I gotta try it.
Yeah.
Coming back. You're right. I forgot my own strategy.
The one thing you didn't realize when we were talking before is I'm actually a really nice guy.
Do you have
a little guy? Gotta be more than $75.
A what?
They're like, nice guy. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's not a mom and pop store. So, yeah. All right. Well, so obviously if you are listening, you know that we have Jeremy on. Jeremy is from Simple Little Life, which is an awesome YouTube channel. He is a YouTuber. He's a knife maker. I'm not sure which one came first. We can get into that. And has a couple other side businesses with your wife, your father, and, just a really, integral part of the knife making and YouTube community. I watched your channel before I ever started and learned a lot of stuff from you. And then over the years we've chatted back and forth, and it just seems like you've been part of the community within this kind of knife making maker community for a long time, which is really awesome. So welcome, Jeremy, to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Absolutely. It's an honor to be here.
Oh man. Yeah. I'm so excited. I know that, like I said, we've chatted over the years, and for us and for me, you know, there's a lot of different makers and YouTubers that I have watched, because I'm more of the maker side of it. And Devin, he's like, he kind of learns all the people, because I'm like, oh, you got to check out this person. So when we first started, when you like messaged me, or when we were all on the Makery Network, originally the podcasts, I was like super excited, because there are all these cool people who I've been watching for a long time. And then you reached out to us to like give us some compliments on the podcast. And I was just like, blown away, you know. So it's fun to have this kind of like, you know, relationship with people that we build over the years. And you kind of, yeah. I think, I will say the first time I heard of Knife Talk podcast was on your channel.
Okay.
On your YouTube channel, talking about Knife Talk podcast. And you like, it was in some video, you kind of talked about it in just almost in passing, you know. Yeah, you're like, and the Knife Talk podcast is really cool. And so I started listening to them, and then I heard you on there. And then, so it's come a long way. It's been a bunch of years, but, so how, and I kind of mentioned this earlier, like how did you start? Did you start YouTubing or knife making first, or, I assume it's knife making first, but how did that stuff start? Like, so you as a maker, as like maybe knife making, but just making in general, like what's your maker story? How did you start making stuff? How did that become part of your life?
My dad was always a tradesman and, always building stuff in the garage. And a lot of times he'd look after me. And so, there was actually a story. My dad was building a cabin once, and I think I was 6 months old, and, he was putting the shingles up. And so he brought my little car seat up there and nailed a 2x4 to it and sat me up on the roof and thought it'd be a great idea.
Oh, man.
And as the story goes, I guess I was like a little rambunctious moving around. And my dad was right at the peak, and all of a sudden he looked, and I came out of my car seat and started rolling down the roof and just disappeared. And on the eve of this roof that he's building, there was a spiral nail sticking out. And my dad doesn't remember putting it there. But the hoodie that I had on, this little hoodie, caught my hoodie, and I was dangling two stories up.
No way. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and then actually on the way home, he was getting gas in his truck, and I got out of the car seat again, and he opened the door, and I fell onto the ground. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Just always hanging out with my dad, trying not to get killed, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and also, like, I grew up always with my dad in the garage, always building stuff. And then, you know, even as a teenager, I was into bicycles, and I'd cut, you know, bicycle frames and try welding two different bikes. I had the dorkiest bike. I took a mountain bike, and I put a set of skate trucks on it, you know, from a skateboard, okay. And then a chainsaw motor. And it's just just dumb stuff. I'm like, this will be cool. And like, no, not very. But and then
that's crazy.
Yeah, and then so I was like I grew up, we're homeschooled, and then I would work for my dad part time doing airport baggage conveyors, and you know, we'd work till do school till noon, and then I'd work from 1 till 5, and I did some quick math, and I thought, you know, I could instantly double my money if I dropped out of high school, and my dad's like, nope, not a chance, and I start doing some research, and when you're 16, it's your own choice, and so. I actually dropped out of high school and went to work full time. But my dad said on one caveat that you register in a program. So I went ahead and registered to become a millwright. And once that was in place, then I quit high school and went to work full time. And pretty much.
What's a millwright?
It's essentially a heavy duty mechanic. but they only work on stationary equipment. So as if I were a heavy duty mechanic, I actually started a heavy duty mechanic apprenticeship about five years ago, but then I could work on highway tractors and stuff and do safety inspections.
Yeah.
And around, it all depends, like up in the Appalachian Mountains, they work on big steam turbines.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, that we work on a lot of oil and gas equipment here. If you go like to the East Coast of Canada, a lot of big fishing boats and shipping boats and stuff like that. So motors, compressors, all that kinds of stuff.
Gotcha. And you said that's like stationary. So you're working on things like that are not a transportation specifically,
yeah, exactly.
Or at least not like, not moving actively. Right. Okay.
And some of it's cool. Fun. When I was working at Sanjo, we had, we worked on these big Cat V12s and they were bigger than my minivan. Just the engine block, and oh, that is some fun stuff to play with.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, when I was in grad school in New Hampshire, I worked on a tour boat. It's like a replica. It was a 90-foot replica steamship, but it had three I can't remember the size, but three Caterpillar diesel engines.
Yeah,
two to run the like dual props, and then a third that was what's it called?
The wheel?
The paddle? No, the power for the boat. So it was the generator. Right. Yeah. And that was just cool. I mean, they were the size of, I don't know, like a grand piano, you know, like they were pretty big. Like they weren't giant, but they were big. And that was just, it's just a cool experience being around a machine that's that big and a diesel too. So it's relatively simple. You know, it's still like a simple machine, but it's like loud and it smells bad or good depending on how you feel, but like being down in that engine room while they were all running, you know, and just like all the power around you is pretty impressive. It's fun.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. So you're so now you're dropped out of high school, you go into becoming a millwright, and then how long did you stay doing that?
So the millwright's a 4-year program and you get your journeyman. And then I'd worked for my dad, and actually it's interesting because the shop that I've just recently moved to is the one that I did my entire apprenticeship into.
Oh, cool.
And it's kind of come full circle. And I did that for, I want to say 10 or 15 years. We installed airport baggage conveyors. Altogether worked for my dad for 17 years. But the last seven of it was in the office. I was a project manager, but actually spent a lot of time. I think I spent like 7 months at BWI there.
Oh, wow. Nice. Right on.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Got my fair share of crab cakes. Oh, man, that's good stuff down
there.
Yeah,
man. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You remember when the DC shooter was wreaking havoc?
Yeah.
So I was there then.
That was you.
No, but there was one gas station that a person was shot at.
Oh, man.
And I got gas in my truck 5 minutes before that person was shot.
Holy cow, that's crazy.
And you remember Evader Knives?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He was there about 10 minutes before that.
Oh, that's crazy.
It's crazy. It's like we were literally 5 minutes away from each other and both like, you know, close to a bad situation.
That's crazy. Yeah. I remember it wasn't, I don't have a ton of clear memories about that, but I definitely remember getting gas at different places and being just weirded out during that whole time, just being like, I'm just getting gas. You're like, I'm like looking at like distance, you know, looking at weird windows and stuff and then vans. And,
remember they said something, I forget what, I think at first they thought it was a white van, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then something so like I was in high school at the time and I remember you could see a road drive by. You could see it. There's a road up above the fields, and we'd like every van we'd see, we'd kind of be creeped out. Right. It ended up being like the trunk of a Cutlass Supreme. Yeah. Like it wasn't even.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That was crazy. Yeah. Weird times.
Mm-hmm. But so I guess so. I did that, and then once my wife and I got pregnant, I wasn't willing to travel anymore. And my wife came with me a lot. So that worked out great. Like she was with me in Baltimore for those months and we did a lot of traveling. So it was fun. It's a really nice way to start your marriage. You leave both families behind and just, you know, living in a hotel and all
just
over
be
and,
together.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And then, I worked in the office for 7 years and hated it. I got certification as a project management. I didn't quite finish the full, there's a PMP course, which is pretty intense, but I got like an applied business management degree and all this other junk. And I just, you know, you walk into an office and you get your stack of papers, your computer, your phone, and at the end of the day, you turn the lights off and it looks the exact same. And when I had done so long, you'll walk into an airport, like they'll build a brand new terminal and it's like a blank canvas. And then you guys go to work, and when you're about to fly out, you look back and there's like this noodle bowl of baggage conveyors, and you see the suitcases going. It's just I don't know, I somehow feel I need that physical satisfaction, like seeing what I've physically accomplished. It means a lot more to me than, and that's just the way I'm wired. Like, I've got friends that just love accounting.
Somebody's got to do it.
Weirdos. But and then from there, I was in the office. I hated it, so I quit, and I was a photographer for 3 years. Yeah, and then it was okay, but you end up taking a lot of like trade magazines, you know, like just headshots of a guy who invented something, and it was paying the bills. But then I was like, this isn't what I got. Like, I wanted to shoot fashion is what I wanted to do. And I was offered a job in Toronto, but I didn't want to move to Toronto. And so then I said, you know what, I'm just going to go back on the tools. And I had never worked in oil and gas, and pretty much all millwrights in Alberta, that's what you do. And so I jumped on that, and I was there for 5 years until things went down. And yeah, and that's actually when like kind of moved out to our place, and that's when I started the Simple Little Life YouTube channel. And I've been making knives for about 4 years before I started the YouTube channel.
Before you go on, why did you want to shoot fashion? Where'd that interest come from?
I love the understanding the technical aspects to get a look. You know, I love the mood that you can create with lighting. And there's a couple, there's one really good studio agency in Calgary, and they ended up moving to Spokane, Washington. But they had a phenomenal studio, and I was in there all the time. I mean, I've shot a couple models that, like, they were signing their contracts with Calvin Klein at like age 15, and it's kind of a crazy. You got to do it right, and it's like, you know, there's a real sketchy way you can go about it, or else you can do it properly, like work with the agencies, and you've got all the people there. And but and I did some decent paying work in some fashion, but it wasn't gonna, like, you know, pay all the bills and save for college funds or anything like that. And so I thought, I've got a ticket, I may as well go back. You know, I shot some weddings too, but those are just exhausting. Like, just
weddings
are brutal.
You got to be on, like, friendly, and if there's a problem and you're the one there, they expect you to do, you know, fix it. And it's like, oh, man. They're fun, like, in the moment. It's buzzing, but, man, I feel like you've been hit by a train. You have to, like, recuperate for 3 days afterwards. But
And all the fun parts about most weddings, you can't really enjoy. I mean, it's nice to see the people together, but you're not really drinking or eating or dancing. Everything you want to do, you just kind of can't.
Yeah. If you did want to drink, though, you'd never pay for a drink. Because, man, you go to receptions, and every wedding, you've got like 40 people. Hey, let me buy you a drink there, buddy. And it's like, no, I've still got work to do. Like, I'd do photo booths, too, you know, like set up with all the props and all that stuff. And
we did a, because I wanted to go the opposite way. I didn't want a videographer, because it's never as good as, for one, it's never as good as the photos. Like, it's never as good as, like, what you thought it was in your head.
Yeah.
You think you dance good, and then you see it on video, and you're like, gosh, man, that looks weird. I felt so good in that moment. Yeah. What happened?
I was on top of the world.
Right. And then, so we did a caricature person. So we got a couple guys who actually do it at the Orioles, and they did it. So that was good. There was like a long line. There was a long line.
Yeah.
But I think it was just, I mean, this, you're still, it's friends and family standing around having some drinks. So they can do it in line waiting for the caricature.
Yeah. That was fun. Unique too, right?
Yeah.
Like a little different. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. And you come away with a really cool memento. Yeah. That was cool. And like you said, there was, like, I remember waiting in that line and being in line with people that I hadn't spent a ton of time with, just hanging out and talking, right? Because you had a wedding, you got like your table, and obviously I was in the, you know, in the wedding party with you, so like we were kind of separated out, so I didn't get a chance to see or talk to a lot of these people that we you know, like family members and friends and stuff. So it was kind of nice to be able to have that, you know, moment in the line where you just kind of have to stand still for a while and like talk to people. You got to put in that situation. It was kind of fun.
That's cool.
So you said that it was about 4 years before you started Simple Little Life that you started knife making. Now, at that time, did you start it like, were you just doing it like casually, like as a hobby, or did you start kind of right off at with Homestead Knives, like making that as like doing it, selling knives and things, or
I've always been a knife enthusiast and a knife collector, and like crazy and never good ones. I mean, we'd go skiing and I'd have like, this was back when fanny packs were cool. I'd have 17 little cheap junky pocket knives in my fanny pack, and I'm skiing down the hill, and every wipeout you just hit this bag of knives in your hip. It's like, oh! But we still wore them every time we went because it was cool, man.
It's so dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I had pocket knives there.
Yeah. We went to Banff like last weekend, and my 10-year-old son, he's like, can you carry some of the stuff in my pocket? He had 8 knives in his pocket. I'm like, nice. We're walking around town going to restaurants. What do you need 8 knives? I don't know. He's like, no. Like tennis you're ball like, wads.
Boy.
And, yeah.
You're like,
it's really son, hurting my leg.
If I've taught you anything, son, you need at least 15 on you at all times.
And a fanny pack.
8's not enough.
And a fanny pack. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. No, and then when I was an adult, I started buying like decent knives. Like I bought some Bark River knives because some of the guys at work had showed me those. And I think I had 3 or 4 like decent knives, like Bark Rivers. And once you have those and you've got 4 kids, you know, they're in sports, dance, all this stuff, you know, it's hard to justify an extra couple $100 here, a couple $100 there for a knife for dad, right? Because I don't need it.
Right.
And so I thought, you know what?
For.
Yeah, but I was like, I wonder if I could make a knife. Like, I mean, I, you know, the one thing I've done a lot of is that at airports, you see the stainless steel trim around the carousels. Well, the way that we did ours is basically kind of like C channels, and you would have to trim them so you couldn't see a gap, but they couldn't bind. Because if they bind and there's suitcases on it, it might like kind of stay down and like dig into the rubber on that on the carousel.
Right.
And so we got really good at, and it was just with an angle grinder and finishing discs, but just getting a precise fit that was a ground fit and freehand. And so I thought, you know what? I'm sure I could make a knife. Can't be that hard. And it was actually Trollski with the first YouTube channel I saw.
Oh, yeah, right on.
And his videos make it look so approachable. I'm like, wow, look at this guy. It looks like he's in a dungeon somewhere, you know?
Yeah, right, exactly.
And he's obviously got a nicer shop now. But I did that. And then I think my first one was with a file. I annealed a file. Yep. And
nice.
I actually built my first belt grinder to make a knife. And I just wanted to. And then also, instead of buying, like, I don't know if I even knew where to buy the parts, but I actually bought a lathe to make the wheels for my belt grinder to make a knife.
Oh, nice. Just
used to buy stuff, I think.
That's great.
Just think, honey, right. I won't have to buy more knives. I'm just going to buy this instead. It'll save me all this money.
Right.
Yeah, and so that was, it was fun. And then I kind of was, you know, making another one here or there. And then some of the guys at work, we'd talk about it and stuff. And they're like, oh, let me see, and I'd make some for guys at work. The first one I, air quote, sold was, there's one guy was going to school, and he had a heated underground parking. And it was January, February was his school term, so I made him a knife in exchange for his parking fob for 2 months of heated parking.
Right.
It's minus 30, man. That is a nice little feature.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you're like, shoot a couple hours in the shop, and I get a parking spot? Nice.
Yeah. And so... Awesome. Yeah, I worked there, and then that's when things kind of started to go south with, like, oil and gas. When I had started there, we had 280 guys and made it through 5 rounds of layoffs, and I was hating it. I actually worked with my brother-in-law, and we carpooled every day, and we were driving into work. It was Wednesday, and I said, here's the deal. I'm not going to be here next week. And he said, what do you mean? I said, either I'm getting fired today or I'm quitting on Friday. Because I said, I can't handle this anymore. Like, you'll be working on a rig with 8 guys. And then, you know, Wednesday rolls up. They do it on Wednesday because I guess you're less likely to kill yourself on a Wednesday.
Oh, jeez.
And seriously, that's what they say. Like, you know, layoffs only happen Wednesdays. And then, like, 7 of the guys that you were just working with, they're like, well, see you later, Jeremy. It'll be on Friday. Pick up my toolbox. And I'm like, oh,
jeez.
And then your boss comes up and is like, well, we know we wanted this in 3 weeks. You've got 4 months, but you're all by yourself on it. And I'm like, are you kidding me? It's just,
oh, man.
And then
yeah, that's that amount of stress, man. That's just can't do that. Like, how do you even live? You know, how do you live without having at least a hint of just expectation? You know, like, oh, that's crazy. I can't even imagine.
And it's funny because the older gentlemen, like some of the, you know, the guys have been doing this for years, like 50, 60, the guys you can really learn a lot of stuff from. They're like, just another cycle. You know, we just wait 6 months. We'll all be back. We'll all be hired. And I had never been laid off before. I never worked oil and gas. And a lot of these guys were used to it because, yep, that's the nature of this business. You know, it's 4 years. Right. It'll be great. And I mean, like, literally, I had, at the end, I actually got my own heated underground parking. We had a gym, like, with towel service. So if I told them Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I'm going to work out, I had my own locker, and there was a clean towel in there every single day. Wow. And it was nice. Phenomenal. So we were all just like, we're going to ride this wave. I was the chair of the safety committee. I was the chair of the social committee. So, like, I had a secretary for 8 hours a day to do anything, 8 hours a week for anything I needed to do, like reports and catered lunches. It was the most ridiculous blue collar job ever. Sometimes I didn't have time to get my hands dirty. I was just like, but yeah, I know. So,
the uncertainty though.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah. And sure enough, I got laid off. So it was me and two other guys. And then, so there's 15 people left, and they actually fired them all about a month later when they closed down the business for good.
Wow.
And it was funny because my boss brought me in and he's like, oh, I don't know how to say this. I said, I'm done. I said, I'm so excited. You have no idea. And he looks at me. He's like, what? I said, I was going to give my notice on Friday. He's like, well, you would have saved us a huge severance package then. Like, they let me go well. And I said, no, honestly. And he was freaking out. I said, don't feel bad. I said, I am relieved. Like, you know, this is a land of opportunity. I can get a job doing whatever I want to. I said, I do not enjoy this darkness that hovers over our shop right now. I can't take it. I said, I'm just like, ugh, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Oof, that's tough. Oh, I called Steph and I said, honey, we're going to Costco, we're going grocery shopping, and we're going to have a party tonight. And she's like, what do you mean you got laid off? I'm like, it's the best thing. So,
yeah.
But, right. I was going to quit. Now we got a few bucks in our pocket.
That's right. Yeah.
And all the stress is gone. Like, jeez. Yeah. You were saying, you mentioned earlier, like, and this is like a story that I hear from a lot of knife makers that, like, they start off and then there's like people around them that start asking, like, oh, can you make one for me? You know, like, you have friends and coworkers. See, my problem is that I work with children. Because I'm a teacher, so like, and they ask all the time. They're like, "Oh, cool, you make knives? You're gonna make me a sword?" I'm like, "No, I can't. I cannot do that." So like, all of my clientele are too young to make knives for.
That's funny. That's funny.
Well, so go ahead, Def. I was gonna say, so you get laid off, and then so that's what did you do right after that, or like, what was the next thing after that?
So that is kind of where that led to the Simple Little Life YouTube channel. I was frustrated because, like, I worked hard and I did my best. And my record, even, like, I guess HR had said that I was supposed to have been gone on the second round because I asked my boss, I said, listen, I want to coach my kids hockey. And that means, like, on this day and this date, I got to be at practice at 4:00. I'm going to have to leave early. Yep. Is that okay? Yep. And so essentially I didn't work overtime unless it was like weekends or early. Like sometimes we'd start at 5 a.m. if we were busy, but essentially said, no, this guy doesn't, they were looking at people that the least amount of hours they worked, they were getting rid of them first because they were going to combine our shop with the maintenance shop and everybody would have to be on call. And so I said, if anybody's not willing to be on call, we're going to get rid of them first. And my boss kept saying, no, you can't get rid of this guy and this guy and this guy. Absolutely not. And I remember thinking, like I did really good. Like, you know, I worked hard and I had great people teaching me and I learned the stuff and I was able to do a good, I felt very satisfied. And every day I said, you know what? I did really good for this company and I wanted to, right? Like I said, I'm going to make you successful. Mm-hmm. That's my job. And then you get laid off because, you know, the company has too many private jets and they make some bad decisions. And And I vowed right then and there, I said, I will never let my livelihood be in anyone's hands but my own. Mm-hmm. And so then we had actually, I guess, kind of backing up a little bit before I got laid off. We had purchased our land that we had, the 13 acres outside of Strathmore. Mm-hmm. And the goal with that was like maybe in 5-10 years, we could look at building a house. I just wanted to secure the land and, you know, we could have a place to go hang out or whatever. And so we had done that 3 months prior and then get laid off. And so I thought, well, you know what? We'll just sell our house in town. We'll take that money and build our house out of town. And our house ended up selling way quicker than we thought it would, and for more. And it was like a bidding war at the end of it. But the people wanted us to be out of there like a month or something like that. And so we bought a fifth wheel. You know, we moved it out there. We had a well on there. Nice. And we lived in that for like 2.5 years. Ooh. While we were, the first year is my problem. Like, I didn't know how to get building permits and this and that. And, you know, all this stuff, if you got a short summer building schedule and you don't have all your ducks in a row, man. And so the first winter, we're like, oh, I guess we're wintering here, like in the RV, you know?
Right.
And
jeez.
And then, so it was kind of around then that like,
you have four kids, right? Is it four kids or three kids?
Yeah.
Four. All right.
Yeah. And I know. I will say the good thing is like the three boys played hockey, and then my daughter danced like with the Alberta Ballet, and that was like five nights a week. Oh, cool. And then so we basically slept in our RV, and we were just
right. Going, you were busy. Anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. But and so that's when I thought, you know what? Like, I really want to look at taking more charge of my own life. And initially, I'd started Simple Little Life as like a homesteading channel. That's why it's got the name. you know, look after ourselves. You know, we wanted to grow and raise as much of our own food as we could. And that was fun. I mean, and we had a lot of animals. And the thing I realized after about 6 months or years that you can't have your feet in both of those worlds, like the modern world and homesteading. And you know, that if we're going to homestead, it's going to end up being work. So you don't play sports. We don't need all these cell phones and tablets and Starbucks. And, you know, we'll make trips to town once a week or once every 2 weeks, like a supply run, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And it's either that. It was too hard to do all the work of a homestead, but still like, hey, man, like I want to go to the arena and I want to get a Starbucks on the way or Tim Hortons on the way. And I like to watch YouTube and I want fast internet. And I don't know. I just found that those two worlds didn't really jive. And so then we just toned down the Simple Little Life, the homestead side of it. And just did like chickens and stuff that's pretty easy.
Right. But,
And I was making videos about like I built a chicken coop.
Oh, man, I got to watch that. My wife is pushing for me to either build or buy one. But I'm looking at buying them. And, man, they're crazy. They're like $2,000, $3,000 a chicken coop.
With this wood prices, this one would be more than that. I built like the bunker of chicken coops.
Nice.
I put like 4x4s into the ground and four feet deep, you know, concrete sonotube. And I actually have mine elevated 2 feet above the ground with expanded metal underneath it so that nothing can get in there. There's not a fox or any critter that could ever get in that chicken coop, man. Those birds are safe, but.
Nice.
And you know, it's like, oh, cool. Like, I had like 17 subscribers, and like four of them were the guys I used to work with. And then I was like, oh, what should I do? And I was still doing knives as a hobby, and I was selling a couple more knives. Like, people found out, and a lot of the guys from work, after they got laid off, they're like, hey, you know, keep in touch. And then they'd order knives. And I thought, well, I should try and make a video about how to make a knife. Who knows? And I make one, and I'm like, what? This video's got like 90 views? It's ridiculous. I checked the next day. It's like, it's over 100 now. And I'm like, and I don't know what that video got. It's actually pretty good. Like, I think I ended up getting like 10,000 views in like a week or two. And this is like for like 20 subscribers or something. And I'm crazy, like, I'm seeing something here.
There's something here.
Take notice. And that's when you get driven down into a niche and you can't leave it. You do not get out of
history. The end.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But yeah. And it was good because, you know, it would have been like a real fun hobby and continued. But, you know, you make a video and it's actually a phenomenal marketing thing because people see it like, oh, can I get one? Can I get one? And now all of a sudden it's like I literally have like 20 orders. And I'm just going to be making knives straight for the next month. And I feel I progressed so much quicker because of that than if I had just kept it as a hobby. But then there's some of those guys that are just hobbyists. And I'm like, blows my mind the level of their work. You know, how clean it is. I'm like, wow.
You're right. Yep. Yeah, that's one of those things that, like, there's... I don't know. I guess that's the debate, right? Is if it becomes a job, then is it still fun, right? And or does it does it need to be fun, right? I mean, is mm-hmm. or can it be fun and a job at the same time? And you know, that's the thing. Like I've always just been a hobbyist knife maker, and like I'll sell occasionally here and there, but only because, you know, people will ask occasionally, but it's
the time's not there.
Yeah, that's the one thing. I just don't have the time to do it, and it would be fun to have the time to do it, but I just don't. And I don't know if like if I would enjoy it as much, you know, because I do like, and that's the one thing, like you said, you know, you kind of get pigeonholed into doing a certain thing. And now our first video for The Art of Craftsmanship was the knife making video. We made a knife, you know, a file knife, and I followed along, or I had watched a video on Vimeo, I think it was, by a knife maker named Green Pete, and he did a whole series on making a knife from a file, and he like made a fire outside, and he like made a pot of tea at the same time, and like, he just did all this stuff. It was really fun, and that's so cool. I watched that, and I had started making knives much earlier when I was in college, I guess. So I started making knives then, kind of off and on a little bit, and doing like saw blade knives, things like that. But that first video was a knife making video, and it did pretty well. But we kind of knew straight from the beginning that we had to keep things different. Mm-hmm. Like we had to keep making different videos, because that was the point on the channel, was to like do a bunch of different stuff, and you know, that the art of what the things I was doing was in the craft, right? So that's why The Art of Craftsmanship was like, it wasn't about necessarily one specific thing, but it was just about making something and doing it well. And when you can make something well, that craftsmanship shows through as your art. Mm-hmm. And so that was something we've always strived to do. But then, you know, you get those big videos, like we get the bow video or the knife video, and they do really well. And you're like, okay, well, now I got to make sure I do a couple knife videos a year, because they're going to, like, quote unquote, pay the bills. You know, like they're going to keep the people there and keep. Yeah. So,
yeah.
But and I feel like, you know, we could have easily done. I mean, I enjoy making knives, and there are plenty of knives to make, so we could have easily just kind of gotten into that market. But we had to just make consciously make that, you know, effort to
and it's boring to shoot a bunch of knife videos over. At least for me, I'm sure Dustin can make them all day. But for me, I'm like, how many more angles can I get of this? Like. I don't want to make every video. I don't want to have to stand next to Dustin at a grinder for 3 days on every video. Right. I can't. I don't want to do it.
Right. I tell you, that is the hardest thing that I'm having right now too. Like, you know, you see some guys, like you look at Alex Steele, right? And he pushes himself. Like he will go to the point, okay, like you know what, you see what he's about to do, and it's like, oh yeah, I can see he's going to push himself to the point of failure, and then again and again, and finally come through the other side, right?
Right.
And I, you know, I don't have that desire. Like, if it's a skill I want, I will do whatever I have to acquire it. And I don't know if this is bad, or I'm satisfied with the knives that I make, because the knives that I make are the knives that I would like to buy. Now, like to go, like, I think about, you know, stuff that I haven't tried. Okay, let's do some inlay techniques. And I'm like, I have no desire to do that whatsoever.
Right.
And even with Damascus, I'm fascinated by it, but I build all this stuff, like forge presses and stuff, and I'm like, it never strikes me. It's like, hey, let's go whip up a billet and see what kind of a pattern we can get out of it. I'm like, I don't know. And of course, everybody's like, when are you going to make Damascus? When are you going to make Damascus? I'm like, I don't know. Never? I don't know.
Right.
It's so hard, because it's like, I honestly don't have this, like, folders and stuff. I don't want to get into that. Simple, you know, the thing I probably enjoy the most now is to come up with a, you know, a spin off a different shape. The knife design aspect is probably my favorite part. And then it's fun to make it. And you know, you see that idea in your head, and then you hold the finished product. But I'm kind of like, every process that I would do on this, on the new knife build, it, like I've showed you 10 times in the last 10 videos, right? Like it's a different handle color. So it's so hard. I'm like, oh man, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know that people just want to keep watching the exact same thing either, but.
Right.
But then there's some knife channels out there that they do it all the exact same way, you know, profile with an angle grinder, and they just crush, you know?
Yeah.
Like every video's several hundred thousand.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I think that's all. Almost all YouTubers are just like scratching their heads. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what to do next.
We've been, so we're doing these, the one I was working on today was the 5 questions video. And that was just something to fill in the gaps between, because it takes us like a month to make a video. Mm-hmm. So we wanted something where we could sit down one day and make 3 videos. So it's just Dustin answering questions and, you know, responding to a troll comment and then doing a show and tell.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's a good move.
Yeah, I think it's nice to have, but it's, I was thinking, because I was so proud when we hit 100 videos of like the library of videos that we made.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, they're all long form. I mean, there's a few short ones in there, but they're all these long form videos that are like the beginning to end of all these projects.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And now we're going to be filling our channel with a lot more stuff that doesn't necessarily end up being like a good library of things. It's all good. I think it'll be good content, but I don't know. What do you think, Dust? Like, we're doing the same amount of big projects as before.
Right.
And we're just filling in the cracks to try to keep our name on people's brains.
Right. Yeah. But and that's what, like, I tell when I talk to people who are interested in like how to start with YouTube or what do you do? And you know, my advice is always just to be consistent, right? To put out work and put it out consistently, because the more you can do, then like it'll just, you'll stay on people's brains, right? You're going to continue to grow if you can stay consistent. If you just make a video and then you stop for 2 or 3 months and then you make another one, like, that lack of consistency is not going to ever drive you up.
No.
That being said, for us at this point, I think what you're talking about, Devin, is like integrity, right? So there's like an integrity based off of what we do and what we're proud of making. And I think that is important. So it should never be just like brushed away, but it also, depending on what the goal is, right? Is the goal for our channel to continue to grow and, you know, be self-sustaining, then we got to figure out any way to do that within reason, right? Still keeping our integrity. But so like, I think, with our, the questions videos, I think they are there. There's some information I think is fun. I think they are fun because they're a conversation with the audience. The way that I enjoy hanging out in someone's shop and just talking with them about stuff.
Yeah.
So I think there's something there. I think I definitely understand what you're saying about like having a library of like every video is like a significant thing. Like, we've made this thing in each one. And it took us, you know, a decent amount of time to get to 100 videos. We've been doing it for almost 6 years. And we just hit 100 videos last year. So that's saying something. But I think, you know, I think we can fill in with something that's fun that we would enjoy watching. Right. And I think that can also be the same thing as like, as long as we feel like it's something we would enjoy to watch. And I always go back to other channels like yours, Jeremy, or, you know, Wrangler Star or Alex Steele. There can be a variety of ways that videos are made because I'm invested in that person and I'm in that channel. So I feel like if you can watch something that, you know, connects you to that channel in a way that is a little bit more personal, or you learn something about them. And that's why, you know, I enjoy occasionally put, you know, Corinne, my daughter is in the videos and occasionally have different people in the videos. Cause it's just kind of like letting people into a little bit of our life and letting them be part of what that is happening there. And I think that's important, at least for the channels that I really like, is that you feel like, you know, a little something about that person. It's more than just what they're making. Right. I would watch all the videos because I really like the person. Doesn't matter what the content is.
So. I will say that is the great thing about YouTube, is to get a little bit more into whoever you want. Cause traditionally, like if we do shoot a traditional video, it's like, it could be like, this old house, stuff like that. But you didn't know any of the talent or the craftsmen on the show. So one of the big positives about YouTube is you can watch that thing that they make, and then you can get to know them a little better. Like Jeremy, you have your boys and stuff on, like Did you feel issues there? Like, should I share my family? Like, I mean, I think that's a big question a lot of people have.
No, I've never really bothered me at all. Yeah, no, I don't think so. When like, I mean, I grew up when like AOL dial-up was the internet, and of course you couldn't use your real name, you know, and
yeah. Right, yeah.
Like my main Gmail email address is not my name, right? And it's like,
right, yeah.
And it's very similar to my name. And they're like, I thought your name was this. I'm like, no, that was in the beginning of the internet, kids. Okay, you weren't supposed to use your real name on your email address.
Right.
But now I'm kind of like, eh, whatever. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Even on my channel, I didn't share my last name at all. But now I'm kind of like, you know what, whatever. If people want to find you, they'll find you anyway, you know.
Yep.
I've had a few comments. People were like, I drove by your house yesterday on some recent videos. I'm like, you're like, yeah. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I was out there fixing my gate the other day, and this car drives by, and this guy is waving at me. And I'm like, I have no clue who you are. You know, I don't know if he thought that I was my dad, but my dad and I don't look alike. He's got hair, right. I don't. But, you know, and like, I think with the new videos that you guys are doing, it's fresh. And the thing is, like, you know, you subscribe to a channel, it's exactly like you were saying. You want to get to know that person more. And, yeah, it's neat to see them in the shop. But sometimes if you see them in a slightly different element, it's kind of like, ah, this is cool. This is what it would be like to hang out at a barbecue with them when we're not even talking about knives or axes or making bows, you know. So I think it's good. And, you know, as long as you don't like the thing is, if it's clear to the audience, there is going to be a portion of the audience that's like, I'm here for making content. That's it. Like, I don't care about your persona. So, okay, cool. Yep. This is making this good, you know. And it's not like it's like making a sling bow. It's like, just kidding. This is actually 5 questions. Tricked you. Got you to click on it, right? Like,
right.
You know, there's differentiation there, and they know what they're getting into.
That is one thing we said. I was like, look, if we're going to pull them in with the troll question as the title, let's do that right away. Because I don't want people to go like, oh, he's going to talk for 20 minutes and then get to it. Like, I want to be, hey, Dustin, someone said this to Dustin, or you hear this crazy thing, like, never put your kids in, or you're an idiot for doing this. And then Dustin sits down and I ask him that question and he answers. Right. Then if you want to hang around for the rest, he tells you what's coming up. Like, hey, 5 questions and then show and tell. So it's slightly clickbaity, but I want whatever you clicked on for, you're going to hear right away.
Yeah, I like that you did that. Yeah. Yeah, instead of like, but wait till the end of the video. I hate that when you click, be sure to stick around to the end when we reveal something. It's like, well, you know, they've got controls on YouTube, right? I can fast forward this sucker on you.
Right, exactly.
Stick around to the end. Boop, boop, boop. Yeah.
Yeah, right. After the next couple commercials, like, yeah, that's not happening. That's right.
We've got 10 minutes of mediocrity, but wait till the end.
Yeah, I wonder what does that work for, like, the algorithm for the click-through rate? You know, like, if you fast forward to the end, does that count as, like, watching the whole video? I wonder if they know.
Well, have you noticed how you can hover over the play slider on YouTube now?
And see then,
and it's got spikes and valley, like, peaks and valleys, and I may be wrong, but I think that is, like, watch time correlation. So it's right in the main player. You can just slide your mouse over it.
I have seen that.
It's, like, key moments or something like that, so... And then again, I don't know how people would find that stuff, right? Like, it'll be like a...
Right.
I don't know, but...
Yeah, I have noticed that. When people watch those things, like, over and over again. And it's funny because I usually notice it when I go to back up on something. I'm like, whoa, what just happened? Up on it. And I'll, like, you know, back up 10 seconds or 20 seconds or whatever. And then usually I'll look at, because then I'm looking at the slider and I'll notice, oh, yeah, that's weird. Oh. There's like a little dash there where, like, they've noticed that a lot of people are doing that same thing.
I bet that's where they get that reading from. Like, I'm like, how do they even know that people are watching it there more? But it makes sense.
Yeah, we came up with the idea today. Dustin was doing something. What were you doing? Oh, you were spraying something. You were trying to make, what was it, Dust? The black. You were spraying it with window stuff.
Oh, so we're restoring. The video we're working on tonight is restoring a vintage Wilton bullet vise that was my wife's grandfather's. And so we're like, I stripped all the paint, or I ground all the paint off, and then I'm repainting everything. And then all the pieces that are going to be just plain steel, I'm bluing with like gun blue.
Okay.
And so I was spraying that was like the handle and the lead screw. I was spraying that with like like a whatever window washer cleaner after I pulled it out of the gun blue or whatever after I did it. Why, Dev?
So I was thinking, because in my head when you were doing that, I was like, well, I know I asked you. I was like, why are you spraying this one, not the other?
Oh, right.
And you were like, it's a bit too big to dip in it, blah, blah, blah. I was like, but just take a rag. And you're like, yeah, I guess. And then I was thinking in my head, well, what if every video we put something in that would get people to question what was going on. Right. But we make it more and more ridiculous every time. Like, I was saying, okay, now just take the vise and like take a brass hammer and bang on the side of it and then listen to it and then sit it down and just move on. Never say anything about it. Never like the comments are like, I really enjoyed it, but like, what's the brass hammer thing? What you like? And just never answer it.
I become more and more crazy in videos about, yeah, that's right.
That'd be a strong move, you know?
You like add one thing that you don't explain, like start swinging it around and then like throw it 5 yards and then pick it up and like look at it and then just move on.
Yeah. What? Or like clamp a piece of steel in the vise, just take a quick look at it, take it out of the vise, rotate it 360 degrees and clamp it back in the exact same way it was just clamped and then get to work on it.
Right. Yeah. Just put a little seed in there to get those comments going.
You know what? Sometimes I'm convinced that stuff is where it's at.
Yeah.
Like some of the stuff that I've done that a lot of times you'll get more comments on what you've done wrong. Right?
Oh, absolutely.
Then what you do right. It's right, like, what'd you do like this? It's like, well, there's more than one way to do that. This is the way I prefer it. That's stupid. And I'll find out, that was kind of a silly way that I did it. But I'm like, hey, man, this is called engagement. Maybe I'll just keep doing it like this.
Right, exactly. I like, my favorite is the comments from videos that I did 5 years ago that they're like, oh, man, you really should do this with this tool. You know, I'm like, you're absolutely right. Because 5 years ago, I was definitely doing it wrong, but I'm definitely doing it right now. But I'm like, I think I still do the same stuff the same exact way. That's fun.
That is funny, though, isn't it? When you get comments from like 5 years ago and people ask, like, speak as though it's right now.
Yeah. Right. Like, why don't you have these new tools in your shop? This is like a really bad tool to use. I'm like, well, it was the one that I had back 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was always the funny thing was like, oh, you use like the tools. You don't use fancy tools. Dustin's always like, I can't afford them. It doesn't matter. Like, and now he has better stuff, but it's like, this is what I can buy, like, with a little bit of extra money here and there. Like, this is all I'm willing to spend on something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you use a mill to straighten that surface? Yeah. I don't have a mill. What are you talking about?
And then when you have a mill, you get the comments like, well, I could do that too if I had those tools.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah.
So, Jeremy, you bought your parents' place?
Yes.
And then you got, I did see the latest video. Like, man, that shop that you got that you said you also did, what did you do in it?
Your apprenticeship.
My apprenticeship, right.
So you got this sweet open space. Like, that is, Dustin and I talk about that sometimes. That's like our dream. Like, halfway between his house and mine is this perfect shop that we can, like, you can have all this open area to do whatever you want. And some unfinished areas where you could, like, have a podcast place and do all this other stuff. So, how's that been? Like, it's got to be exciting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's phenomenal. And then my parents, like, they were having a new house built in Strathmore. And so when we'd moved out here, their house was kept delayed. And so in the back of the shop, the back half of it was full of their stuff. And they've got most of it out now. I'm still not using the back of it. So it's a 50 by 100-foot shop. And then... Ooh. Yeah, there's also an office on the west side of it that's 24 feet by 40 or 50 feet. There's 7 people working in that office.
Oh, wow.
And then I've got a 40 by 60 foot barn, like a two-story barn with a concrete floor in it. And so, man, I've got, it's insane. Like I was that's working that nice in space. In one side of our two-car garage, and that's perfect, right, for knife making.
Yep.
Actually, I preferred my shipping container to that, actually, because I could be at my workbench and literally turn around without a step. I was at my drill press, you know, and yep. just boom, 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 so efficient. And now I've got to walk. Like, maybe we'll put a Fitbit on because I could actually earn a few steps, you know. But no, it's fun. It's. I didn't think it would be so overwhelming to try and figure out how to set it up. And then I kind of just got, like, I spent weeks thinking about, like, okay, what's the most efficient setup? And I had, like, little cardboard cutouts and to scale and move stuff around. I was like, you know, why don't you just start putting stuff somewhere? Yep. You can always just move it, you know? So, I'm loving it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Cool. Yeah, and even if you had, you know, even if you had planned it all out perfectly and you put it all there, you really don't know until you start actively using it. You know, it's like, and I mean, obviously, like, you've had shops before, so you understand the flow of work, you know, so you have that mindset, but still, you never really know until you're, like, actively moving around and using a space, and then something just moves even a foot or two one way or the other way, or you start filling in gaps and stuff, and that's all.
Or get a new tool or whatever,
Yeah, right, yeah, now where did I put this thing? Yeah.
So, do you find yourself now searching for bigger tools to fill it? Like, is there something now you say, okay, well, now I got all this space, I can finally put this thing in there?
Yes. Yeah. It's a problem. But you knew, because the space would allow it, my pocketbook wouldn't necessarily, but it's still right. Like, oh, but I just bought a motorcycle lift.
Oh, nice.
I'm like, I've got the space for it, and that side looks like a man cave now because I've got, like, a motorcycle project. Speaking of unfinished projects, at the very beginning, there's a motorcycle build I started probably 10 years ago, and it's been storage, you know, ever since I got laid off, essentially. And so I got that up on the lift there. I'm like, this looks so cool. But then it's also not, like, there's also a sense of the, you know, the kind of the crammed, gringy studios or, like, shops that I'm like, that guy actually does stuff there. Whereas I find this place is big. If I don't keep it clean, it's a huge mess. But then when I look here, it's like, is this just for pictures? Do you actually do anything in here? You know, because it's like, I don't know. It's if I want that real neat, cluttered, you know, artisan, you know, studio feel, I would have to have so much garbage everywhere, right?
Or
like old antique stuff that we can't find here, you know, like, if I see these guys, I follow them on Instagram, it's like, oh yeah, I just picked up this big, massive fly press, and I can't find a fly press for sale in Canada. Anywhere.
That's crazy.
Or like a power hammer. Like, I've got room for a power hammer if I wanted one, you know? Yeah. Good luck. You know, you have to go to the States to get those.
Yeah, it's, and then, you know, especially now because everything is so, like, just crazy about blacksmithing and knife making that, you know, anything you work to get, like, you obviously you try to get lucky and try to find the deals and stuff, but even then it's so hard. I feel like I understand what you're saying about I know that's I think that's kind of like and I think you have the 60 kilogram Achayo. You have that one, right? The 125. Yep. I have the same one. Yeah. And I'm really happy with that anvil. I really like it.
Yeah, me too.
I did post on like a local community group here where I live about, like, just saying, like, hey, does anybody have an anvil? Like, I'm a knife maker, I'm a hobbyist, I'm happy to come and talk to you about it, and, like, I don't want to pay a ton of money. And I actually got a hit doing that. And then I have a sawmaker's anvil, which is about 225 pounds or something like that. And it's just a flat top anvil with no horns on it. But it's a really nice anvil. And I got it from, like, a guy who works in Baltimore at a saw sharpening place that's been there for like 100 years. They sharpen industrial saw blades. That's what they've done. And he was like, yeah, we've got this anvil. And he's like, I've got another one that's got, like, that pointy end to it somewhere. He's like, I don't know where that is, but if I find it, I'll let you know. I was like, yeah, please do. If you find another anvil, let me know. So but I definitely know what you mean about the shop feeling like a used space. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all the nooks and crannies are filled, or you get this, like, and my shop has that. It's small enough that it's like, it has that feel to it. Right. It's in the basement. It's small. So, like, and I try to use that space as efficiently as possible. If it were like another maybe 10 feet wide, that would probably be a little bit more ideal. Cause the one thing I can't do is put a table saw in my space. Mm-hmm. And I'd really like to have a table saw. but it's like it doesn't fit horizontal, or it doesn't fit across the short space, which is kind of what I'd need, because then I could use like my main bench as an outfeed table.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a little shop table saw that works, but there are a few things that I would like the extra space for. But I definitely know what you mean. If you have too much space, then I don't know. Then yeah, right. Then it's like it turns into almost like you said, like a studio where you have like you can have these different areas, but it's like, is that just for like looks good in pictures? Like, is it a really like used space? But who knows?
I was watching some. There's some huge YouTubers where they end up remaking what they originally had.
Oh yeah, right.
Like, yeah, really? we used to shoot stuff in my kitchen, so they'll make a kitchen in a studio.
Yeah.
Or they'll be like, we used to have like this little wood shop area, and they'll make a little tiny like.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we would do that, Dust. I feel like you just have to embrace the new thing. And like this new thing has its advantages, and this new thing also has that. What do you call it when you watch something just because you want it? Like, it's almost the maker version of food porn,
right?
Where you watch the stuff that you can't have, and you just enjoy it by watching it. So you watch the Dream Shop videos because that's what you want. So you kind of I feel like once you get that great shop, you just have to embrace that. It's a cool, great shop. And don't try to go back. You're not in your basement anymore, or you're not. So you just have to accept that I'm doing a new thing now, and this is the cool new thing. So appreciate this.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I thought also there's so many of us that really enjoy the process of moving space and creating new space and creating a new environment, like what you were showing with your shop, Jeremy, like just kind of working through like, how am I going to set this stuff up? And then occasionally you do videos in there, but then you'll do a tour like, oh, this is what this side of the shop is looking like now, you know? And I really enjoy that because it's like, I'm watching that progression. Devin is the house that he's in now was my parents' house. Similar to you, right? So our parents moved up to Pennsylvania just across the Maryland line. So they're about an hour from us now. And Devin and his family moved into their house. And so my dad's shop, which is, you know, like probably, what is it, Dev? Like 12 by 20 or so, that maybe not even that wide.
Yeah, a little bit less than Jeremy's.
Yeah. That shop space, like, I was super excited for Devin to move in there because I was like, oh, it's cool, we can set up your shop space, you know, like, let's make that a video. That'd be cool, like, and talk about like how do you set things up. And you know, we did a podcast about that, like, and I think we've also done a video about that, about like how to set up a space and what things you do, and you know, and just things that I've learned over the years. And that's just like so fun to look at a space and think about how you're gonna use it. But you know, but then you got to use it. You know, you got to actually set it up and use it. The one really nice benefit about having a shop that we shoot a YouTube video in is that my shop is almost always clean, you know, clean, quote unquote clean, right? Because it has to be, because it has to be relatively presentable, and I have to have my middle table open to be able to shoot the next video. So it's like, okay, well, I got to clean up, you know, it's kind of nice.
Totally. Yeah. You know what I find that I've done here is almost set up like a little shop within this bigger space. Yeah, you know, like I've got my main work area, and it is pretty much just what I had in my garage. Mm-hmm. You know, the tools are hung in the same spot in the wall, and I move around that space the same way. The only difference is I've got a bigger work table in the center. But then right now, especially with me not moving into the back, I mean, the back's going to be like a woodworking area, so I can put a big I want like a miter saw station that's got like 10 feet on each end, and a table saw in the middle of the room with infeed, outfeed. And, you know, I want to be able to do all my woodworking processes without moving a single tool. And that's that will be dedicated for. But like even the front of the shop, I'm using like actively maybe a quarter of it. You know, and so it's kind of like, it's interesting because I was looking at possibly building a shop before we moved. And I'd come out here, and obviously, I mean, I've worked for years and years in this shop. But when we did, I mean, I think we've had like up to 20 employees that I worked with in this shop, you know?
Wow.
And I look at where we had our machining area, our lathes, and, you know, a couple welders. Right when you walked in the door, there's two big iron workers there. And And I look at it now, I'm like, man, I stick my motorcycle there. And sometimes I'm like, there's some motorbikes in the way. I want to be able to roller skate in here. But, yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like, I don't know. The one thing that's nice is that future projects or, you know, the kids, you know, my son has a truck. And so if we want, mm-hmm. we can bring it in here and we can pull the starter out of it and we can just leave it in the middle of the shop for weeks. And it's not going to inhibit what I need to get done, you know? So that is the benefit with space. But, yeah, I don't ever see this thing being, like, full of equipment because that would just be cool, actually. But
that would be just too cool.
A lot of greenbacks, you know?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That just, like, reminds me of fireball tools, you know, something that he would have, like, just crazy, like just an entire giant shop full of like the coolest, oldest tools. One thing I was thinking is your lathe that you got from your dad. Mm-hmm. So your back, it's back where it was, correct?
Yep.
Right? You moved it from there to your house and then now back to the same shop.
Yeah. And
that was like not that long apart between when you moved it and when you put it back.
It was like a year, maybe year and a half vacation.
Oh, nice.
And then take it back. You don't get away.
That's funny. Nice. Yeah. One of the videos I liked that you put out recently was like you bought the little mini bike type thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He
yeah.
had that thing is awesome. It's super
blast.
Cool. Yeah. How's that? You like? I know in the video you like kind of went across the fields and out and checked the mail and came back and stuff. Like that's so much fun. So the reason why I was talking about it is so Devin and I just bought, and I think we haven't. This is probably the first time it's been talked about. We got a bicycle conversion kit with an 80cc motor.
Really?
So it's like a little motor and it comes with all the stuff to put it onto a bicycle and you create a little 80cc, you know, moped basically.
Is that going to be for your bike?
Yeah. For one of ours. No, Devin has an electric bike.
Yeah. Well, you'll have the gas.
The original idea.
It's like, gas. Yeah.
Like 3 or 4 years ago, I thought you could get one for $100, some Chinese two-stroke engine and all the stuff you need to put on a bike.
Right.
And most people have bikes. So basically, for $100, you can have a little moped that goes 35 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was like, that's a cool video idea. $100 bike, 100-mile range, like that type of stuff. It's all in one thing. It's like this super cheap thing you can make. And then we just never did it. And then I finally saw it again on like Amazon. And it was like $125. Wow. So I was like, all right, Dust, we're going to buy it. And now that I have my e-bike, now we can do a comparison video because
The
e-bike's like $1,700. It goes 40 miles per charge compared to $125 thing. Or we'll probably go buy a bike at Walmart or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it would be like, it would be like $250 all in. For something that can go 150 miles on a tank compared to this e-bike. And I think that's kind of how we'll take it. We'll compare and contrast that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited. It'll be really fun.
Stick a 5-gallon bucket on the top tube when you're all done. Say, I can get 7,000 miles with this sucker.
That's cool. Yeah, right.
So you said it was an 80cc?
Yeah, 80cc, right, Dev? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's decent.
A little ADCC motor. It's funny because Devin, he sent me a message right after Christmas. It was like, is it time? Is it time yet? And he like sent me the link again. And I had just looked up. I had just looked like not even 2 weeks before that. And I was looking again at them like, oh, maybe these are cool. Maybe we do need to do this now, you know?
Yeah.
It was just like fun, you know? Like I'm not going to like ride it into town or anything, but just to have like the little bike around and just, I think it's cool. And and my daughter is 13 and she's like old enough and strong enough to ride around on something cool like that, you know? And I wanted to have that experience of having this like, you know, I don't know, there's something really like primal about controlling that much, that power, you know, whether it's a ton of power or not, to be able to like, and something I loved when I was a kid, we had mini bikes at our, you know, my, like growing up with our brothers and stuff. And those were,
you had,
yeah, well, you know,
I had a Power Wheels and that was it.
But yeah, so we like with the older brother. So Devin's 4.5 years younger than I am or yes, like that. And my two older brothers are about a year apart. So yes, we had it when we were little, but just, that was like such a fun experience riding around on it. So, and I had a motorcycle when I was in college and then a couple years after. And, you know, there's just something I always felt like I was having fun, anytime I'm out riding my motorcycle, was like, this is fun. It was like, never just like a business, you know, it was never just like just driving from one place to the other. Mm-hmm. And obviously I didn't do it, you know, I didn't have it for years and years and years, but there's just something really fun about that. So
it's a certain freedom on a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. It is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you ever watch the show Long Way Round?
Heard of it. Is it about world touring?
Yeah, it's Ewan McGregor and another of his actor friends. The first one was done like 2006, and they went from England all the way around to New York.
Oh, okay.
And it's great. It's a great documentary. They're on, I don't know, BMW something.
Dual sport kind of.
Yeah, and they carried everything, obviously, and they did the whole trip, and then they did two more series, like, every 6 or 7 years they would do it. But those are great documentaries to watch about just these super long trips of these guys on motorcycles. Really cool.
Yeah, I hear a lot about those because one of the podcasts I listen to is called Adventure Rider Radio, and you know, he interviews all kinds of people that are on like world tours or whatever, and everybody talks about those documentaries, and I keep thinking, man, I guess you just check those out one of these days.
Yeah, long way around. Check that one out first.
That's cool.
Adventure Rider Radio.
Oh, it's good. It? What's that?
That sounds cool. Yeah, definitely. I don't know if I need more podcasts to listen to, but anytime someone like suggests one of mine, I was like, ooh, check that out. Yeah. But nice. That's cool. All right. So we're about an hour and a half in. So Jeremy, we want to invite you to tell us a disaster story. So those who are listening, and I'm sure you know as well, Jeremy, that we have visitors on, we like to ask them to tell us a disaster story. Makers, people who have done things who have failed completely and had to either restart or scrap an item. And we love the stories, and I always think back because Devin and I told one of those stories each on our very first podcast episode, and it's been fun because one of those things that we get a lot of comments on is when we do something wrong or if something happens and I show it and we keep it in the videos, people really appreciate that.
Yeah,
because there's like a reality, like, you know, YouTube videos can be edited completely and you'd never see any of those mistakes, but they're always there, you know, they're always those things. Yeah. So we like to tell those stories because they're fun and then it makes us relatable. And, you know, we all makers, you know, fail once in a while. So you have a story like that for us.
Yeah. You know, like I knew you were going to ask this even before you queued me up before the show. And I'll give one afterwards, like probably the stupidest thing I've done that I just couldn't recover from, but it wasn't making related.
Okay.
I don't know. I couldn't narrow it down because it seems every day I do something stupid in the shop. And you get, I think the more you make, the more you just learn to like go with it, you know, and you learn to fix your mistakes. But I think one of the ones that I thought was, I felt really stupid about and is public is that I was doing a mock-up for a frame lock knife that I was doing with Alex Steele, that collaboration. And right. I had my templates.
Sorry, real quick, what's a frame lock knife?
So it's a kind where you have to, you depress one side of the frame with your thumb to unlock it.
Oh, okay. Yep, got it.
Yep. Got it. And a liner lock is very similar, except it's just the liner that bends in, whereas a frame lock, it's the whole actual side of that handle.
Yeah, gotcha.
So I did like these drawings. I don't even remember what program I used, but cut out my templates, glued them to steel, you know, cutting out, had bearings, and this is just all, it's so much work making folding knives like that, and so I'm like getting this mocked up and blah, 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 and I did one video on it, and then the guy goes, well, that's really cool, I didn't know you're left-handed, and I was like, you know, sometimes you get these comments, and like, what are you talking about, you jerk, and like, your instant reaction is like, you know, you just want to be snarky back at him, and I was like, no, I'm right-handed, and he was like, well, you're building a left-handed frame lock.
Oh no.
I totally didn't even think about the fact that you literally have to have, you know, the right scale on the right side. Like just right over my head. I'm just, wow. Way to go, Jer.
After you made it and put out the video and everything.
It's like, I didn't know you're left-handed. Duh, I'm not left-handed, dumb. Well, why are you building a left-handed knife then? Oh. Didn't think about that one. That's not a major disaster, but that was a one of those dumb moments like, oh, come on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's like, I have screwed up at least a dozen knife sheaths, or, you know, either like knife sheaths or, any leather work, because you got to work opposite. Cause smooth side against the rough side.
Get it all done.
And you like, yeah, you get everything. And then you fold one back and you're like, oh, it's the wrong side. It's the left-handed one. Like, what the hell?
Crap.
I know. Right. Totally. I like cut out one piece of leather and I'm like, oh shit. Put another one on there. Try again.
Yeah.
Dang.
Geometry.
Funny. Yeah, 90% of my questions when working with Dust, he's just like, oh, no, this is what it is. But every 10% I get, he goes, oh, yeah, never mind.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Like, Dust, is that the right way up? Is that how we want to do it? Oh, no, you're right.
This was the practice one.
I'm glad I'm here.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Just keeping you on your toes, Dev. Make sure you're on.
I don't want to shoot this twice. You're doing this right?
We got 2 more hours. You got to get it all done. Let's go.
Right.
Nice. Cool. All right. So we'll finish up the episode with some recommendations for our listeners. Jeremy, you have a recommendation?
Yeah, you betcha. I'll go in Devin form and recommend a big YouTube channel. Have you guys ever heard of the channel Bikes and Beards?
No.
No.
So it's these two guys. I don't know where they're from. I'm thinking like maybe Pennsylvania area. I don't know for sure. But like they'll go out and like buy old Harleys like from an old police department. They'll buy them at an auction and then drive them back. Right. And oh, they're funny. Like nice. They are hilarious videos. Like well done. I think they've got a decent team working with them. But nice. Like they put these stickers on the side. It's like they couldn't replicate a real police bike, right? They weren't allowed, so instead of sheriff it said surf, like SHERF surf department. And it's like, honk if you love donuts and this stuff. And they just do these funny videos, and it's generally two guys. And I really enjoy that one. It's a good clean channel too. You can watch it with kids and stuff. So
nice. That's Bikes awesome. And Beards.
I think they got like 2 million or something. Yep.
Oh, right on. Nice. Yeah, it's surprising how many like YouTube channels that are out there that like how could I have never heard of a channel that has 2 million subscribers? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and like being a YouTuber, like that's half of the business, right? It's just knowing but like there's so many niches, you know, like we're all in this niche, and you know, I know the like dozen people around me within the niche that have that much success, but like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and I'll like mention a channel that I think is like huge that I know that's super well known. I think I'll mention it to like one of my students or a friend, and they're like, yeah, I don't know who that is. I've never heard of that person.
Yeah.
I'm like, really?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
How could you not?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. How could you not?
Yeah.
Yeah. My wife still thinks I'm crazy. Cause she's like, why are you just watching YouTube? I was like, "What do you? Why do you watch Netflix? Why do you watch HBO? What are you talking about?"
Yeah, my wife's the exact same way. Like, she hates YouTube. She hates watching it. She's like, really? If I need to learn how to do something or fix something, I want the quickest, shortest video. But like, she doesn't subscribe to anything. She's like, YouTube is dumb. I was like, yeah. Hallmark holiday specials are dumb.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you watch murder shows all the time, and I don't like those either.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice. All right, Deb, you have a recommendation?
Yeah, I'll go with my tradition. There's. You ever heard of Nardwar?
No.
Mm-mm. He's a Canadian, Jeremy.
Alrighty.
He started out interviewing, well, he didn't start out, but he since like, I don't know, the early 90s, he's this really weird nerdy guy who interviews artists, and now he interviews a lot of rappers and stuff, but he like every big band and artist he's interviewed. But he's so strange that at first people just are kind of like making fun of him, but then he knows so much about each person.
Oh, I think
they're always like, wait, what? How do you know that? Because he'll bring up something like, your high school teacher did this and that, like, where he'll like throw names at them where they're like, they're totally thrown off. But so just look up Nardwar.
Okay.
And he's got so many good different interviews.
Nice. Nardwar. Yeah, you did mention him to me before, because you were like talking about how he finds all this crazy stuff that people don't.
Yeah, I remember I was like telling you, like, we should do something like this,
right?
Where we find something way deep, like about find out about someone. And but you know, he probably studies them for months and months to try to figure out that stuff.
Right. Yeah. Cool. All right. So my recommendation is, so I'm going to say this the way it looks, and if I'm wrong, I'll apologize. So, my recommendation is, a Instagram and YouTube, channel. Sorry, I'm pulling it up real quick. Make sure I get it as right as possible.
Amanda Huggins.
So, this is the gentleman Scott Wiener, and I think that's how we say his last name. It might be Weiner, and that would make it easier to say. But his Instagram is the crafty Wiener, and and his YouTube is the same thing. So he's actually a local here in Maryland, near us. He actually is right near Devin and I both. And we were on kind of a bigger maker group, and we kind of started a Maryland maker chat group. And he reached out, and we chatted a little bit about his space that he has here in Maryland. This really cool space that he's going to be working on building and making into kind of a potential content creator space. So check him out. Give him some love. He does some cool stuff on Instagram and YouTube. He's going to put some cool videos of making different stuff on woodworking and different making things. So that's Scott Weiner, or Scott Wiener on Instagram, the crafty Wiener.
Why didn't you just say Weiner and let him correct you later? You went for Wiener. First.
Like, well,
let him do the Wiener thing.
So the reason why is because here in Baltimore we have a famous newscaster named Deborah Wiener, and hers is spelled the same way, Deborah Wiener. So, all right. So, unfortunately, we lost Jeremy within the last few minutes of the podcast.
why don't we give him a few minutes and see if he bounces back?
All right, and he did. He did send me a message. He says it looks like his router punted him off again. So I'll message him back real quick and see if he can hop back on with the same link, and if he does, then great. And if not, then we'll finish up the podcast. We're right at the end.
We'll be right back.
Yeah. All right. Well, we did get Jeremy back. You're back, Jeremy. We lost you briefly, but you're back on.
The World Wide Web, hey?
Yeah, right. We talked before the podcast started briefly, and you were like, well, it's kind of, we'll see. It's kind of bumping you off and on your internet occasionally. So
yeah,
we're like, well, if we make it through for a little bit, that's good. And if not, then that's fine too. So
yeah, no, I'm shocked. Like we've had such problems with our internet here lately, and I'm like, oof, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I usually get through my podcast. So we do ours on Friday mornings, and
right.
But lately, it's just been brutal. But I'm glad I could get back on here. I thought, man, that's gonna be a weird end.
Yeah, right.
And he passed away.
did your daughter get to do her online lesson this evening?
Her instructor. He's actually in Vancouver. Okay. He's like some leader of a Vancouver Philharmonic. He's a well educated guy, but he had some emergency or something, so he had to cancel it for tonight. They're doing it Saturday, I guess, now instead. So,
gotcha. Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it was fine because we made it right to the end. So, Jeremy, thank you so much for hanging out with us and chatting.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoy it. Like I say, I listen to every one of your episodes, really enjoy them. And so it's an absolute honor to be on here with you guys.
Oh, thank you so much, man.
It's just as fun in real life as it sounds like it is.
That's the hope.
Yeah, for sure.
Nice. All right, well, guys, make sure you don't forget to head over to Jeremy's YouTube channel, The Simple Little Life, and you can follow him there. Tell us your podcast one more time. You said Can-Am Suit, right?
Yep.
That was called?
Yep.
Okay. And I'll put that in the show notes.
What do you guys talk about there?
It's probably like two grumpy old guys, maybe. He's a little older than I am, but no, the reason we call it like Canadian, American, and then soup. Anything can go in soup. We just talk about whatever, like guns and, I don't know, making. Sometimes my co-host Todd likes to make fun of other makers. Only that. The real big. That's always big good, ones, right?
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's like, Todd, you got to tone down here. You're gonna get yourself canceled, son.
Now, see, that's how you get listeners. You start dogging on other people,
yeah. Smack talking, yeah, exactly. Stuff. Yeah, that's funny.
bringing that divisive listening. People love it.
That's right. Yeah.
Start the drama.
Yeah, and then for the titles, it's just like the truth about Jimmy DeResta. You know, like,
yeah. Yeah.
You're like, I really like him.
Yeah, that's right.
Wait till the end, and you'll find out.
That's right.
He's a nice guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys, and also head over to YouTube, and you can follow us, subscribe to The Art of Craftsmanship, and comment. Let us know what you think about the videos. If you have an opinion about our the new questions videos, let us know on them. And you can also ask any questions that you have. It can be about stuff for shop stuff. It can be stuff about our channel. It can be about whatever you think. So if you want to have your questions asked and answered on the questions videos, you can head over and comment on our video. And you can also head over to patreon.com and support us there at The Art of Craftsmanship. And then all of our patrons have access to our Discord server. And on the Discord server, you can ask us questions there. And actually, one of our newest questions videos is going to have one of our patron questions on it. So if you are so inspired to support us in that way, we really appreciate it. And we're trying to be a little bit more active with that community. So Those of you who are over there, we really do appreciate it.
You pay $2 once, and you can ask a question, and you can get out.
$2. Right, exactly. Yeah, right. And you can be part of the Discord server from then on out. You know, mm-hmm. You'll have the link, so you can join us that way.
We'll just slightly shame you when you leave, but you can still have access.
And everybody else, make sure you head over to Instagram. You can follow us at The Art of Craftsmanship on Instagram. You can follow Devin, The Art of Camera Guy, and you can follow Jeremy, The Simple Little Life. Other than that, thank you guys all so much. It's been a blast. Jeremy, we really appreciate you hanging out with us. Thank you all so much, and we will talk to you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.